This episode was recorded at 3:15 p.m. Pacific Time on Wednesday, September 7th, 2022. Things may have changed by the time you're listening to this.
The youth simply will not buy the world that the elders have given them. They see too much hypocrisy in it. They see too many things that are wrong with it. And I think that the elders are going to have to realize that they simply can no longer browbeat youth into following its established path.
Welcome back to another episode of Sunset Politics. I'm Sam.
I'm Story.
I'm Molly. And this week we wanted to do like a little check-in and just see how all of our hosts are doing. So Sam, let's start with you. What are some life updates you have for our listeners?
Yeah, so I appreciate everyone being patient, and especially Molly and Story, who've been amazing because I just moved into college, which is so exciting for me. Just today, I had a class that's all about podcasting and making podcasts and like radio play and everything. And so I was thinking of you all the entire time. So yeah, what's been up with you guys?
Story, go ahead.
I've been having a fairly casual couple of weeks. My job ended last week, so I'm currently unemployed. I'm moving to college in like 3 weeks, or probably closer to two now. I'm really excited. I'm kind of jealous of you, Sam. It sounds really fun. I wish I could take a class all about podcasts. But yeah, it's I haven't been up too much.
How about you, Molly?
Well, I also am very jealous of your podcasting class. That sounds so cool. Oh my gosh. And yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat as Story. I also move into college in about 2 weeks. So kind of just getting everything together and ready to go and trying to say some goodbyes to people that are still around. But yeah, and obviously reading lots and lots of interesting news because we have lots to talk about today, actually, which is really exciting. So yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you. So, as for what we will be doing our podcast today about the topics we will be covering, we will be doing a follow-up on Mar-a-Lago because there have been some more information that's been revealed. The full affidavit was released. We will be talking about Biden's recent speech. We will be talking about a myriad of topics that you will find out as time goes on. So yeah, I don't know if anyone has some information they want to start off with. I'll, you know, open the floor up.
Story, did you want to give us a little update on Mar-a-Lago since you've been following that pretty closely, it sounds like?
Yeah, so it's been a while since we last recorded, so I'm not sure what all has changed, but a lot has. I'm not sure if we had the full affidavit last time we recorded, but we have that now for sure. Yeah, I don't think we did. We have a couple more document releases from the Justice Department. We have the big ruling that was made last week where a federal judge decided to temporarily block the DOJ's access to certain documents to do a initial privilege review, which is a very interesting decision that we'll get to talk about. There have been pictures released of some of the documents. It's kind of crazy. Trump has basically he's kind of admitted fault almost. When the DOJ put out a picture of a bunch of the documents that they found, and he was like, "This is how we found them on the floor." And then he was like, "No, that's not how they were stored. I had them in cartons and they were organized." It's like, so you admit you had them? It's pretty crazy. But yeah, let me open it up to you to give your thoughts.
Yeah, I think on the topic of silly things Trump and co have admitted to surrounding Mar-a-Lago is that Melania Trump pretty much made it known that her and Trump do not share a room and do not sleep together or anything, which I thought was really funny. She was pretty much just like, I don't know, like, I don't pay attention to what he keeps in his room. I just pay attention to what I keep in my room, or like something along those lines. That was a little like, girl, like, it's a little telling. But definitely a slightly humorous and interesting thing to come out of all of this.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I didn't know that. That's wow. I mean, I can't say I'm too surprised though, just from, you know, some of the pictures we've seen of her very much avoiding to hold his hand. But what I think is interesting is that former Attorney General Bill Barr said that the decision made by the federal judge, a Trump-appointed judge, by the way, was wrong. And he said that he thinks the government should appeal the decision made by that judge. And if you don't, just to like reiterate what that decision was, the federal judge ruled that a special master could review the evidence that the FBI seized from Mar-a-Lago. So that's pretty interesting in my opinion, since he was obviously Attorney General underneath President Trump. So kind of going against that administration in some ways, which I think is very interesting.
Yeah,
for sure. And then kind of slightly off topic, but still on the topic of former President Trump committing crimes, I believe it was Georgia where just a local DA was bringing charges against Trump on a state level, not a national level, which I think is really interesting because it's like a lot easier to get convicted of state crimes than it is to get convicted of a federal crime, from my understanding of the legal system. But it was I forget the exact wording of it. The DA brought a charge against President Trump for racketeering in relation to his attempts to overturn the election in Georgia. And so I think it's really interesting that while we have this Mar-a-Lago raid happening and all of this business surrounding stuff that like Trump illegally brought into his home, we also have a like little like, I don't want to say small town, but like a little like a state level thing too, in that it's not just the national government that's like tired of Trump skirting the law. We have people on a state level too, and you know, literally just like a local lawyer. And I think that is really awesome. And you know, you don't need to be this huge like high ranking official of the top of the government in order to demand justice.
Federalism, baby.
Yeah.
I mean, I think what's also really scary is that I heard like some of the information that was taken in the documents was about like nuclear capabilities, and that even that there was possibly like information about other countries, like governments, like nuclear secrets, which is really interesting. So I don't know. It just some things that being made public could possibly have some consequences, or like really, what's a good word to use? Like strain those relationships possibly, depending on what that information is.
The for sure. The nuclear thing, I believe, is unconfirmed so far. It was reported by, I think, the Washington Post originally. That some of the documents may have been related to nuclear weapons. It's unclear how, if it's the U.S. or if it's foreign countries' programs. What we do know was in there was documents related to foreign human intelligence, which means spies, basically. That there were essentially information about who our spies were, which could obviously be incredibly damaging to them, because in a lot of countries it's like death penalty, right, if you're found out to be a spy. So, yeah, definitely some scary documents that you do not want someone like Trump having.
Yeah, for sure. I know that, like, pretty much half the affidavit was redacted. And, you know, obviously, I'm sure there's, like, not that, like, there's some stuff that, like, isn't that exciting that got redacted, because that's just government. But it's also, like, a little interesting to think about the possibilities of a president having, like, such intense and confidential documents just lounging around his house. And I know that the documents were on different levels of classification, and there were some that were like literally classified as top secret, like really big, important stuff. Like as Story was saying, things like spies, that is very dangerous, not only on a personal level, but also as a country, that can definitely strain our global affairs. Alrighty. Is there anything else that you want to bring up? Oh, Story.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry. I wanted to talk a bit more about the special master investigation thing. So the judge is essentially saying, we're going to appoint a third party to review these documents to see if any of them fall under attorney-client privilege or executive privilege. And the reasoning that the Justice Department, I think the Justice Department has officially appealed, or at least they're going to, is that executive privilege doesn't usually apply to former presidents. In fact, there are only a few like edge cases, I think, where that's ever been interpreted that way. That executive privilege almost exclusively refers to the current president having access to those documents. So President Trump saying that he had executive privilege documents is kind of also an admission of guilt, because those executive privilege documents should be property of Biden now, because he's the president. The judge is basically saying, well, it's an unsettled territory, so we're just gonna like temporarily block this access while the special master reviews it. It seems like likely if the DOJ does appeal, or even if it is found that some of them might be executive privilege documents, that it wouldn't be found that he is protected by that. So it might just be a crazy judge doing crazy things. It might just be a judge being overly cautious. I don't think it's going to be a huge deal. It seems like to me that that it's a pretty open and shut case if the DOJ decides to bring charges. So Molly and I answered this question last week, but do you think if the DOJ determines that they have enough evidence, do you think they should bring charges?
I mean, I would love to see Trump in prison for his crimes. However, I think that it would end up being a very nuanced case, and something that I am personally weary of is, let's say the DOJ does bring charges against Trump. What's to stop him from appealing to the Supreme Court? And we know that the Supreme Court leans more conservative, and a lot of judges have been appointed by Trump himself. And so I think that the likelihood of Trump actually, facing any penalty for his crimes are unfortunately low. However, I am absolutely for, people trying their darndest and really just breaking this precedent of presidents being infallible, and realizing that if a president commits a crime or goes beyond what is in their power as president, that they have to face the consequences for that. So those are my thoughts.
I agree, Sam. I feel like I echo everything you said. I think it's so important that people are held accountable for their actions, especially a public figure who had that much power and still continues to have that much power. Do either of you have any final thoughts before we transition into our next topic?
I was just going to say, if Trump does go to prison for this, then it's a federal crime, so he can be pardoned by the next Republican that gets into office, which they almost certainly would. Going back to the Georgia thing, if Georgia sends Trump to prison in Georgia, presidents can't do anything about that, because the pardon power only applies to federal crimes, not state crimes. So Georgia could do it.
Listen, as our brilliant former teacher, Mr. Stuckert, said, if you're going to commit a crime, commit a federal crime. And unfortunately, Trump took that to heart, because we don't want him getting pardoned.
Well, it seems like he committed both federal and state crimes.
That's very true. So let's hope that these state charges hold and he sees his day in court.
Yeah.
Alrighty. So on that note, let's transition into our next topic, which is President Biden's recent speech, which has caused many waves. I've seen a lot of people on the right not too happy about it, and a lot of people on the left kind of taken aback and like, wow, okay. So I don't know if either of you want to give the rundown on what the speech was, and then we can share our thoughts.
I mean, I can try to give like a little short summary. So President Biden gave a speech at Independence Hall, which is in Philadelphia. And a big part of what he talked about was what the Republican Party has become. And I think that's really interesting because he talked a lot about how former President Trump and MAGA Republicans, however you say it, represents an extremism. And he said, quote, that threatens the very foundations of our republic. So he really went off about how this group of people has really threatened to like hurt our country and threaten like our values as a country, it seems like, from what I've like the short bits of his speech I've seen, which I think is very interesting. But also in some ways, I think it's very valid to bring up those concerns, because no matter what side of the aisle you're on, I think there's many Republicans who agree that MAGA Republicans are just a whole nother group of people. They're not even willing to compromise. They're very, very, very strict in their beliefs. And they really do have a lot of conspiracy theories in their heads, like how President Trump supposedly should still be in office right now. So yeah, do either of you have anything else to add to like the explanation or anything?
No, I mean,
pretty good explanation.
Thank you. I tried.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen the speech probably 3 or 4 times now through like watching it and watching coverage of it. I thought it was great. I thought it was on point. The fact that Republicans are mad at this is more about them than it is about Biden. The Republicans are very, very mad at this speech. And for kind of like unjustified reasons also. There was like a picture going around that it looked like he was standing and like the background was like all red, and it looked like he was like evil, and like Republicans were like sharing that and was like Biden is like descending into fascism, and it's like what's funny is like the building was like lit up like red and blue like the American flag, but like the camera only focused on the red part, so like, it just looked like he was like giving like an evil speech, which is kind of funny, given the dark Brandon meme that's been going around, which I just find really funny.
Sure. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Something that I think is really interesting about this speech and kind of, you know, what it signifies as a whole, especially for Biden as a president, I think that Biden campaigned and went into office as being kind of definitely more centrist and having this idea that he was going to bring together Democrats and Republicans and kind of like take a step back from the extremism that we saw in the Trump era presidency. However, we saw that this was not going too well for Biden. He was getting pretty bad scores in like likability or like how people thought he was doing as a president, because obviously the right doesn't like him just because he's a Democrat, and a lot of people on the left didn't like him because they believed that he was too wishy-washy, and, you know, he wasn't doing enough to actually better America. And so we see this turning point where Biden has slowly but surely stopped taking this gentle approach and this, like, friends with everyone approach, and is really starting to call out like Republicans on like their, like, pardon my French, but some of their bull. Like, you can beep that out if you want to, but I don't know how else to put it. And I just think that it's going to be very interesting. I'm interested to see what he does over the next 2 years, and how it may or may not affect his reelection if he chooses to run again. I don't know if that's been announced or not.
I don't think it has been officially, But yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it has been either. But you reminded me of something, Sam, too, that is interesting. Is I think I talked about this last episode, but there was like some rumors going around that Governor Newsom was going to try to go for a 2024 run in the presidential race. And he had an interview a few weeks back, and he said that's not true, that he's not planning on running, and that he would support President Biden if he ran again. So I just thought that, like, that's a little bit irrelevant, but I just thought that was interesting. Like, President Biden definitely does have some, like, people who are really rooting for him to run again. So that's just kind of interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I think I kind of want to talk a bit about the Republican response to the speech, because it's been very illuminating, I think. There's been a lot of people saying that, oh, this is going to incite violence because you're calling half the country evil, which is he's not. He didn't even say all. He said very clearly, not all Republicans are MAGA Republicans. Only some of them are. I've been able to work with the good ones. But basically, like, Republicans are saying, yeah, this is going to cause violence by us. And it's like saying we're going to commit violence and it'll be your fault that we're doing it, which is like, kind of weird when, like, the main thing is calling them out for is wanting to do violence. They're just kind of saying, yeah, we do want to do violence and it's your fault, which I think is it's a window into their soul in a way. I do think that the choice of, like, lighting is kind of added to that in a way, but I mean, it really shouldn't. It's just kind of funny that it looks that way. Yeah. Thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, I stopped a long time ago trying to fight what MAGA Republicans think over silly things. And, like, obviously, we're gonna fight fascism and, like, criticize bad viewpoints. But it's also, like, sometimes they say stuff that's so silly that's, like, I don't even know how to respond to that. Like, okay, if you want to believe that Biden is wild and evil because cameras have a hard time picking up blue lighting, then go for it. You know, it's like, whatever at this point. And I know I'm, like, kind of making light of it and laughing at it, because it's like, what else can you do in this political landscape? But it's also, like, very indicative of where we are as a country and how little people are able to take criticism or work together. And it's like, wow, that's real silly.
Oh, yeah. You're completely right. And I think it's sad, like you said, like, at some point, you kind of do have to just find ways to, like, cope with it, which can be, like, making fun of it or just laughing about it. Because I think also what sometimes fuels these people to act the way they do is, like, how mad people get trying to tell them, like, no, you're wrong. And I think that they like that. They like being instigators and making people, like, being like, oh, we're right. We, like, know all this stuff. Like, you people just don't know anything. And so I think sometimes the best thing you can do is be like, you're incorrect, and I'm just going to sit here and let you keep thinking you're right, even though you're not. Which sounds like it's not productive, but I think also, again, like, the less you give people attention when they want it, the bigger effect it does have in the long run. So
yeah, for sure. Any final thoughts on that? No? Okay. Well, on that note, continuing our talk about Biden and his approach as president and his presidency, we should discuss his recent announcement of student loan forgiveness, which has been something that a lot of people have been asking for a long time. And he finally announced plans to start student loan forgiveness. So it was reported that the Department of Education will provide up to $20,000 in debt cancellation to Pell Grant recipients with loans held by the Department of Education, which is huge and really awesome. Biden has talked a lot about making college more accessible, and this specific plan comes amidst, you know, the pandemic and kind of the financial burden that the pandemic has also brought upon. So I think that was really, you know, he mentioned that was kind of, you know, it was in light of the pandemic, we are canceling some student loan debts, which is super awesome. I don't know if you guys have thoughts or anything to add.
Yeah, sure. I think it's great. There's been a controversy with student loans. A lot of criticism, some of it valid, some of it not. But this is something that Biden can just do sort of by executive action. It doesn't have to go through Congress or anything. And it'll help a lot of people out. So I think it's a good thing. A lot of the criticisms of it are, I mean, there's the one that's really bad, which is, well, I worked really hard to repay my student loan debt, so why are you forgiving it now? Which is, I mean, it's like, you know, if we discover the cure for cancer, is it unfair to give it to people because people have already died of cancer? I don't think so. So
you can't see the massive eye roll that we all just had.
But yeah, the other argument, the other two arguments are inflation and the fact that it's regressive, that it tends to benefit people with college degrees more, who tend to already be more advantaged. Which is true. It does that, right? If you're more likely to have more debt if you have a college degree, which is part of the reason why there's an income threshold. So it's like $125,000 if you're single and $250,000 if you're married. You don't get the forgiveness if you're above that income, which is it prevents it from going to the top few percent of people. The plan is sort of tailored in a way to limit the regressivity of it. So the bottom, 90% of income earners are earning like 95-96%, or I think it's up to like 98 even, of the benefit, whereas like the top 10% are only getting like 2% of the benefit. So, it's always going to be a challenge like that. And there are also people that didn't get their degree that have a lot of debt, and they're the ones that were suffering the most from it. So, and they also benefit from this a lot. So obviously, like, if you never went to college, you don't benefit from this at all. And those people tend to be struggling a lot. And we should also do stuff to help them. But it's President Biden's limited in what he can just do through executive action. And I think this is a good thing he can do. Even if it's not going to help everyone in society, it's still a good thing to do. Yeah, and the other argument is inflation, which I think kind of falls flat. I think Wharton, which is a big economic model that's used by University of Pennsylvania, I believe, said that there was going to be a very minimal amount of inflation. I think it was like 0.14% of inflation, maybe. And the reason why is because usually when the government spends a lot of money, which this plan would, you would expect there to be a lot of inflation because there's a lot more money in the economy now. But that actually doesn't really compete with this because people aren't just getting like $10,000 in their account. They're removing a liability, which would, for most people, that came in the form of a few hundred dollars a month. And for most people, actually, since the pandemic started, that was zero because there's been the freeze. So we haven't collected very much student debt, if any, since the pandemic. So that the inflationary impact of that has already kind of been felt, because the inflationary impact would come from people getting more money to be able to spend it, which would cause prices to go up. But because we already have the freeze, this plan is not going to put any new money in anyone's pocket. It's not going to free up any assets that would be spent on debt that are now being spent elsewhere. It's just not going to do that. Over time, as we start collecting payments again, we might start to feel that. But then it's not going to have that much of an effect because it's spread out over such a long period of time. And also, part of this plan is that we are starting to collect student loan debt again in January, which is going to reduce the inflationary impact even further because it'll cause people to be spending more money on the debt, which means they're not going to be spending as much in the economy, which will cool off the economy, which will reduce inflation. I hope that made sense. I think all around it's a good plan. It's probably the best way to do student loan forgiveness, this specific plan is. So, yeah, rant over.
Yeah, for sure. And just like quickly piggybacking off of what you were saying about you know, it only benefiting people who have already received their degrees. It is worth noting that part of this plan was to continue to hold colleges and universities accountable for hiking up their tuition, despite, you know, it not computing with the rate of inflation. And while it didn't seem like there was a like very specific steps that, you know, like actionable steps in place, that was a part of the plan that Biden had rolled out. And so, you know, hopefully we can see in the future having degrees more accessible, because not only are you canceling debt, but you're trying to lower the cost of education altogether.
Oh yeah, no, Sam, that's kind of actually what I was going to talk or add on too, is like the cost of college in this day and age is ridiculous. Like I will just say, like, I'm not going to say where I'm going to college, but I know you guys know, but my parents are going to be paying over $60,000 a year for me to go to college as an out-of-state student. And that's insane. I mean, because I want to go to law school. So for me, it's like, I don't even know. Like, my parents are going to obviously help me with, like one or the other. But I'm still going to come out with some debt. And, like, I think most people do have debt because of the price of college. Like, even with scholarships or financial aid, most people are still paying something out of pocket. And it's a really, really high price. And I think also there's a lot of societal pressure in the United States that, oh, if you want to be successful, like, you need to go to college. Like, people tend to look down on people who don't go to college for some reason. And I know a lot of people whose parents did not go to college who are very successful. And, you know, college is just one route. And so I think that also what needs to change is, like, if people don't want to help change how much college is costing or help pay off some of that debt, like, what do you expect people to do? Like, you can't really look down on people, but also be like for not going to college, but then complain about paying off debt for people to go to college. Like, I don't know. It just doesn't make sense to me, because I think furthering your education is a very personal decision, because everybody has like a different path in life or different dream or what's important to them. And if people want to go to college, they should be able to. It shouldn't cost people like to have to work for their entire lives to pay off the debt that they owe for just going to get an education to do whatever they want to do. And for sure. Off of that too, this is my favorite part of the whole student loan forgiveness. Have either of you heard about the tweets from the White House account?
Yes, I have not,
but I'm so excited for you to educate me.
Okay, Story, I feel like you explained this way better than me, so I'll let you start and then I can like jump in if I think of anything. Okay.
So there were a bunch of Republican congressmen that were making the first bad argument that I was talking about, the unfairness argument, that, oh, we shouldn't be, you know, forgiving people's debts. I worked hard to pay off mine. And then, you know, if you look into a bit deeper, it turns out that all those people were quite hypocritical. And so the White House Twitter account put out a bunch of tweets saying this congressman received this much in PPP loan forgiveness, which PPP loans are basically like small business loans that were pretty heavily forgiven. They were criticized heavily for being really easily forgiven. And so a lot of these politicians are now criticizing this debt forgiveness, benefited a lot from debt forgiveness, it turns out. So that's the gist of it.
And tweeted from the White House Twitter account, which is such like an iconic way to be like, actually, you're wrong.
Yeah.
That's what I find so funny. Like this article from the New York Times. So it's by this lady named Amanda Holpich, and this is a quote. The official White House Twitter account, at White House, normally traffics in staid infographics and excerpts from temperate government speeches, but on Thursday night, it took an aggressive turn. And so, I don't know, it's just pretty funny, and I think one of the people that got called out was actually Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, which was my personal favorite one, because she is so outspoken about how she's so much better than everyone, about how, you know, she sticks to her conservative values, how she doesn't take advantage, she works hard, but looks like that's not fully true according to Twitter.
There's a moment where Biden was giving, like, he was like talking to reporters or something, and he was like, yeah, you know, there's been a lot of Republicans that have been like criticizing it, including that woman who believes in the, you know, whatever. He was like, obviously
she doesn't
deserve
to be called by name.
Yeah, it's just so funny.
is pretty good. I mean, I feel like I have to say, like, thank you, Biden and the Biden administration for making the student loan cancellation, like, actually happen. And also thank you for making everybody's entertainment for a while on Twitter with the tweets, because that was a really great way to spend the evening, was looking through that Twitter account. So thank you.
Yes, truly.
Yeah.
Any last thoughts?
No, I think we've covered it a lot. Yeah.
Perfect. So our next two pieces of news are really exciting. They have to do with elections. So first of all, there is a Gen Z man named Maxwell Alejandro, and he is running currently for the 10th district in Florida for Congress, and he's an Afro-Cuban man, and he's 25 years old, and if he's elected, he will be the first Gen Z member of Congress, and I also believe the youngest member of Congress ever elected in Florida, which is really awesome and exciting. So we're rooting for you, Maxwell. And, oh, sorry, before I go to the second part, do either of you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's about time that we stop letting all of our representation be from people who do not represent us. And, you know, I think, like, pretty much all of Congress is over, like, 40 right now. I mean, that's, I don't know, that statistic, that just was a guess.
Just to clarify, there are currently only 31 members of Congress that are under 40. It's not quite all of them, but out of 535, it's not very many.
But, you know, a lot of them are older generations, and yet the younger generations, Gen Z and millennials, are really the ones that are the most active in politics and, like, really have been pushing for change. And so I think it's awesome that there is a candidate that, you know, is young and willing to represent, like, the voice of the generation, sort of. So shout out to Alejandro. I hope he wins.
Our next piece of news is there is a special election in Alaska for a House seat in Congress, and a Democrat won this seat, and was the first to win a House seat in 50 years. And her name is Mary Peltola, I believe is how you say her name. And she beat Representative Sarah Palin, and she's the first Native Alaskan to win a House seat, and she will be the first Native Alaskan in Congress. So that's really cool, and we are so excited for you.
In the wise words of Lizzo, it's about damn time. Sorry, again, for the expletive, but it was needed. Yeah, that's incredible. I didn't know that she would be the first Native Alaskan, like, I don't know, did you say woman or person?
I think just person in general, actually.
Yeah.
Is what it said.
Yeah, so that's, like, way overdue. I mean, the history of Alaska being a part of America is, of course, really problematic, and, like, give natives their land back, please. But it's awesome that at the very, very least, we are, you know, having space for natives to be a part of the government, I guess. But, like, obviously that was very well deserved from her, and that's just really awesome that we get to have that representation.
Yeah, I'm really glad to, in both these cases, to see, you know, diverse groups of people being represented finally. Yeah, I mean, I don't live in Alaska, but, you know, obviously I'm really happy to see it. And kind of going off this theme of special elections have actually been going really well for Democrats since the decision in Dobbs v. Jackson, when the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. Democrats have been significantly overperforming. They've won a couple, I mean, like this district and a couple others, they won where they weren't expected to. And in a couple, like, really solid Republican-leaning districts, they won. They didn't win, but they performed better than the district usually votes. So I think it's interesting to see that that the decision in Roe seems to be getting more people out there to vote. I think there was a study recently that found that abortion was one of the top issues that made people more likely to vote. I think it was the top issue that made people more likely to vote in the midterms. And it was like the second most important overall behind the economy. So yeah, good to see that it's motivating people, although obviously a decision still sucks.
Yeah, but you know, even though it is a very awful decision and like really unfortunate, like you're saying, it's good that it is motivating people and, you know, having people who may not otherwise be all that interested in voting or may not vote altogether, you know, get involved and be willing to, you know, utilize their right to vote.
100%. I think, like, since we're talking about voting and, like, getting people's votes out there, I think another big factor as well has been, like, the amount of gun violence that's been going on, because there was actually a shooting that happened in our home state, I believe, last week, and we're just seeing that so much more. So I think that these factors, like Roe v. Wade, the economy, gun violence, like, as unfortunate as these things are and how bad they are, it is interesting to see and honestly really inspiring to see how people take those issues seriously. People who really do want to see a difference will get out there and vote on those issues and use that as motivation to be like, I want to help get other people out there to vote as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that being active in, you know, your rights and being like a active citizen is incredibly important, whether that is voting or through protest or through, you know, whatever means you have of utilizing and, you know, showing off your constitutional rights, because the world right now is really insane and we need people who are willing to, you know, put a foot down and get involved. And, you know, it's really hopeful, I guess, to see people who are actively working very hard to make a change, and also people who, you know, are maybe new to the cause or, you know, before were uninterested and are now very passionate or at least aware. Alrighty, any final thoughts on that? Yeah, I think that's it. I don't have any last thoughts. Story, any last thoughts?
No. Well, actually, a bit.
Okay, please.
Sam, it's been really, really good to have you back. We've missed your energy so much.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be back. It's been a long trip. It took me 2 weeks to get to college because we drove. And now I'm settling in. I'm in my dorm. And I'm very excited to get back to podcasting. And I will hopefully soon have a little bit more of an official recording space other than my dorm room, which is where I'm currently recording. So I'll hopefully have access to a studio by the next episode, which is so exciting.
Yay.
Well, congrats on moving into college. Your dorm looks really, I know what listeners can't see, but your dorm looks really good.
Thank you. Yeah. Listeners will just have to suspend their disbelief and imagine a cool dorm room. Thank you very much. Alrighty. Well, it has been so lovely to talk to you guys again and make another episode for everyone. And on that note, sunset out.